might do worse than the old god had done. He'd live up to his fucking legend, every frightening bit of it. Be glad the one that came that night wasn't as bitter and broody as you. All things considered, it was surprisingly well-mannered. Christian narrowed his eyes. As you've just been. You never explain. Were they becoming friendly? Was Barons capable of friendly? Power is grey. It goes where you will it. Wrong or right. Dark or light. Reviling yourself is the surest way to go dark. Christian bristled but said nothing. The bastard had struck a nerve. Barons didn't know he'd begun hating himself long before he turned unseely, when he'd been but a lad, for hearing all those truths no one else could hear, for making those he loved uneasy, for inciting suspicion and fear. But even more shaming to his character, he'd come to revile those around him, to feel contempt for their lies and evasions, their inability to face what they felt. Between despising himself and looking down on others as liars and cowards, he'd grown to adulthood with a serious chip on his shoulder. He'd donned the mask of a carefree, good-looking young Scotsman, but there'd always been a streak of darkness in him, perhaps even repressed sadism, seething anger at his fellow man. Was that why he'd been one of the first to turn unseely prince? Had the evicted magic of the dead prince somehow sniffed it out in him and deemed him a fine fit? Had Fey power targeted him long before that night at Bandrocade, even before Mac fed him unseely? He shifted his wings uneasily. Fuck, he had wings. He could fly. He considered that for a moment, looking for the first time past the unseely element of it, to the simple beauty and power of having wings, the freedom, the strength. But since the day they began to grow, he'd done nothing but bitch about the itch and the pain, the need to clean them, how he could no longer sleep flat on his back. No position was comfortable, and he'd begun to fear like a bat that he might need to hang upside down to get any rest at all. And sure enough, the bloody things hurt most of the time, felt wrong on his body, kept him on constant edge. He canted his shoulders back, expanding his druid essence into the fey appendages as he accepted, nay, welcomed them for the first time. When the world was safe again, he might fly a velvety night sky in the highlands, watch wolves tussle in the moonlight with their cubs, soar beside a grand eagle for a few hours, glide across a silvery loch, tumble to a soft landing in a bed of heather. Bloody hell, he had wings. For the first time since he'd begun to transform into something otherworldly, he felt elation. His wings responded, lifting slightly, fluttering as if with a sigh of pleasure, as if with the aloofness of a cat, they'd been waiting to be noticed, stroked, appreciated. Heat raced through his body into the strong, sure sails that spread and fanned without conscious thought, the powerful muscles in his shoulders rippling smoothly as they arced high before crossing down again to tuck behind his shoulders in a position he'd never before been able to achieve. Perfectly tucked, precisely where they were made to be. Effortless, neither dragging nor aching. He shook his head with a wry smile. His wings had always known instinctively how to arrange themselves, but his brain had been in the way. He'd been in the way of himself. They'd been a burden because he'd thought them a burden. And now that he thought them a gift, they behaved like a gift. He stole a glance at his companion. If he could learn to like himself and the world around him, Barons could learn to have friends. Thanks to Dagus, the Kelter and the Nine were practically bloody married now. They'd become clan in every meaningful sense of the word. Like the Nine, the Kelter had long been insular, secretive, staying intentionally isolated. But the world had changed, and neither band could afford insularity anymore. There were too many risks to them all to shun shared knowledge and power. Christian wanted friends. He'd missed having them as a lad. God damn it. At least he could have peers. Barons cut him an irritated look.
What?
Don't tell me you can actually hear what I'm thinking. Christian snapped. He wouldn't be surprised. Barons and his men were bizarrely attuned to people's slightest nuances. I endeavor not to, Barons muttered. Sometimes you infernal creatures seem to be holding a bloody megaphone to your brains.
What is the god's name?
Christian changed the subject swiftly. It would be easier to be courteous if he knew something of whom he was to address. Culsons. They are the keeper of doorways, of gates and passages, of the underworld itself, standing bastion at all that is liminal. When they can be stirred to bother themselves, Kulsu may be with him. If so, beware her blades.
What blades?
The ones I just mentioned.
Why is Coulson's a they?
You'll see.
Are they hideous?
Christian braced himself for the worst. Barons cut him a mocking look. No more so than they may find you.
Well, where are they from? How do you find these old gods?
For fuck's sake, shut up!
What the bloody hell is wrong with trying to understand my situation? Were you this much of a pain when Mac was trying to figure things out? How did she stand you?
She prefers me lying down, on top of her, frequently behind her. You want to keep talking, Highlander? They made their way down the long white corridor in silence. Deleted Christian McKelter scene from Fever Song.
I stole a bit of Mac's hair a while back and carry it in my wallet.
Yes, death carries a wallet.
Funny the things you do to try to normalize yourself. It's not as if anything in that wallet is worth a damn, the way the world is now. But when I slip it into my jeans, I get a vague sensation of being Christian McKelter, of the Clan Kelter, who has a driver's license and credit cards and a picture of my mother and one of me and my childhood sweetheart, Tara, building a fort down by the lock. I don't carry Mac's hair from sentimentality or interest in her, but because with it, I can sift to her location whenever, wherever I feel like it. And keeping an eye on that woman is on my list of priorities. I didn't mention this to Barons. He's not the kind of man you tell you carry a lock of his woman's hair. And there's no doubt in anyone's mind that's what she is. Sifting to her location inside Malice's is simple. I touch her hair and let my mind go to that strange cool place I now have that seems to connect to something deeper within the earth than I ever reached with my druid arts, draws upon it, becomes one with it, and I can suddenly step sideways in a way, because space and time no longer function the same for me once I've tapped into whatever it is I'm connected to now. One of these days, I really want to be able to sit down and talk to a born, not made fae and pick its brain about what I can and can't do. Maybe when this is all over and we get a sliver of peace. She's a fright, standing in the middle of an overblown, gothic nightmare of a room. Not because of what she looks like, but because I can feel some kind of dark wind inside her, and for a moment I wonder if Barons lied to me. There's Mac, then there's a shadow within, crouching, so damned hungry, dark, velvety, and utterly seductive. I get a vague impression of enormous charm and charisma. Whatever lurks within her can be beguiling if it wishes. I expand my senses, trying to assess the emotional content of whatever it is and get nothing. Abso-fucking-lutely nothing. The thing that abides inside Baron's rainbow girdle does not feel. At all. Not one ounce. Not one flicker. I can't penetrate past that. If I'd known earlier, when she approached me at the abbey, that she was inhabited by the Shisardu, I might have picked this up. But my expectations colored what I'd perceived. When you don't expect a monster, it's hard to see one. When you know it's there, it becomes so visible you wonder how the bloody hell you ever missed it.
Christian,
she exclaims, then explodes in a staccato fast rush.
What are you doing here? Where's Barons? Is he okay? Did I hurt anyone? What about my parents? Is Jada wearing the cuff? She has to wear the cuff. The ZEWs will get her again otherwise. She's okay, right? I didn't hurt her. Did I kill anyone? Who did I kill?
I narrow my eyes, assaulted by a veritable barrage of emotion. Genuine, unless the Shisardu can fake it to perfection. I relax only slightly, unwilling to make mistakes. I proceed with extreme caution, not getting one inch closer yet. Jada is fine. She's wearing the cuff, and no, Mac, you didn't hurt anyone. You just bloody cocooned us all.
But I had blood and black feathers and...
Tell me you're not currently the Shisardu. I cut her off impatiently. This is the only other test I can perform, and it may or may not be valid, depending on the power of the malevolent book. She stops abruptly, blinks, and then says,
I'm not currently the Shisardu. I think it fell asleep, but you have to contain me with the stones. Now, Christian, while it's not aware, sift me to wherever the stones are and lock my ass down. Do it.
It's my turn to blink. Okay. Either the Shisardu is playing a deep game because it wants the stones, or it's really Mac and she's finally wised up. She locks eyes with me. Tiny little dots of crimson appear in the corners, then vanish.
I know I killed,
she says in a low voice.
And I get that you don't want to tell me. I scrubbed before you came. I know what I must have done to end up that way. Please, Christian, you have to neutralize me.
It's what I came for, lass. I extend my hand. When she rushes toward me, I flinch because I also feel a dark wind rushing at me, a chilling, icy, voracious dark wind that then slices into me even more savagely than the biting wind in the Unseelie prison, chilling my already too cool heart. But she takes my hand and hers is warm. And she doesn't slap any runes on me, so I focus on Chester's and blink us off into that strangely malleable, liminal place the Fae can access, and we're gone. When we reappear in Riordan's office, she says nothing at first, just stands and spins, her face lighting up as she observes Barons, Jada, and Fade. She exhales gustily and seems to relax, like she's taken her first deep breath in a long time. Then she locks gazes with Barons and says nothing for several long moments, and I somehow know they're having an entire conversation without speaking. Christ, the emotion I see, hell, can almost feel in the molecules of air between them. It convinces me like nothing else could that this is really Mac. I observe Barons curiously. Does he feel? Is he capable of it? I can't get a solid read on him, but the abyss that I felt within him previously is abruptly no longer empty. She fills it somehow, and in the filling redefines it, and him. Her face changes then, and she scowls.
I said, who did I kill, Barons? Don't lie to me.
It doesn't matter, he says.
Every life matters.
You killed only Unseelie and a single Shisir.
Who?
She snaps. Barons shrugs. I don't know.
Describe her,
Jada demands. When he does, Jada murmurs,
Marjorie.
To Mac. Mac drops her head and deflates. Barons moves toward her and she stiffens and draws back.
Don't touch me. You have to contain me with the stones. I think it's asleep, but I suspect it won't be long, and I have no idea what will happen then.
Mac, he says softly.
I need to touch you so I can get inside.
No.
She snaps.
Lock me down first, then touch me if you want to.
I might not be able to reach you then. He snaps back.
You're gonna have to risk it. I know what the thing is capable of. I feel it inside me. Not right now, but I felt it when it took me. It's amused by suffering. It feeds on it, thrives on it, draws energy from it. It's beyond sadistic and sick, but it's floundering right now. It's not at its strongest, but it will be soon.
Her head whipped to Jada.
The cuff is what was keeping the ZEWs from being able to find you. Never take it off. I don't know what the book did to the sweeper. It could be out there still. It sent it back in time.
Jada says quickly.
Fuck! So that part of the legend was true. It can manipulate time.
Mac explodes.
Lock me down, now.
Barons is on her. He simply vanishes, then reappears with his hands on his shoulders, as if he too can sift. What the fuck are the 9? Rather 10 now. Great Dagus was a handful before. Now he's out there somewhere and able to move like the 9. If he hunts, nothing will see him coming. They both freeze for a long moment, Mac looking up, Barons looking down. Then she says softly,
"You'll figure something out. This won't be permanent. Or maybe I'll figure something out, but you have to do it. I can't guarantee that if I kill myself, it won't simply jump to another body. Please, Jericho, don't let me kill anyone else. I don't want to live with the death of people I love on my conscience. I don't want to live with the fate of the world on it. I can't. This is the only way, and you know it."
"Hush," he says softly and closes his eyes.
"Jericho, don't,"
she says.
"I don't know what it might do to you. Don't go inside me after it."
"Fucking trust me to be able to survive."
"I can't carry your death,"
Mac says.
"It would turn me into the same kind of monster that inhabits me. Once before, I was willing to destroy the world just to get you back."
He opens his eyes and a faint smile curves his lips. "I know," he says. Dark eyes glittering.
"That is not a good thing,"
she hisses. "In my book it is." "Well, it's bloody well not in mine," I growl. "You heard her. Barons, give us the stones. If he doesn't, I'll be on him in seconds. Take them from him." They ignore me. Jada stands, watching them with apparent fascination. "Fucking try to relax, Mac," Barons growls. "Let go. You've got walls up. Drop them," he demands. He opens his eyes, his dark gaze boring down into hers. She locks her jaw and stares stubbornly up. "Mac," he says softly. Then his eyes say something to her I can't read, but whatever it was, her lips curve with a slow smile of delight.
"I thought you didn't believe in words,"
she says with a husky laugh. "I believe in you, and sometimes you're so obtuse I'm forced to resort to them. Let me in." With a soft sigh, she closes her eyes and goes limp against him, melding their bodies together. And that's when all hell breaks loose.
Deleted Mac Riordan scene from Fever Song.
"She kissed me. She wanted..."
He trailed off. I shot him a venomous look. "Tell me you did not have sex with Danny."
"Of course I didn't,"
he growled. I said indignantly, "Well, why not? What's wrong with Danny? You sleep with everyone else." He gave me a blank look that turned instantly to annoyance.
"You don't get to have it both ways, Mac. You can't be pissed at me because you think I did it, then get pissed at me because I didn't. What the fuck's with that?"
"It's the principle of the thing," I said, scowling. "Danny shouldn't be sleeping with you, at least not now. But how dare you reject my girl? She's the best thing you could ever hope to get."
"You think I don't know that?"
Then he said softly,
"She's a virgin."
"Oh, thank God." A knot I hadn't even been aware of in my stomach loosened. I'd been so afraid she'd had it taken from her as a child, or taken from her silver side, or giving it away as coolly and impersonally as a porn star. Wait, I said, scowling again. So that's the only reason you didn't?
I had a lot of fucking reasons. I told you she was a virgin because I thought you'd want to know. Figured I wasn't the only one worried about what might have happened, Silverside. The meltdown at the Abbey about Shazam made me think she might have had a child.
I softened. Oh. So how did it end up between you two? My darling Danny. She'd gotten rejected first time out of the gate. I hated that. I didn't want her to ever be rejected. Why on earth did she have to pick Riordan? When she'd first come back as Jada, I could have seen it. But she wasn't that icy woman anymore. And the more she thawed, the younger she appeared. I groaned, understanding her motive. She always said she wanted her first time to be epic. That's why she wanted you. None of her other options were available. Barons was out of the running, and Vlain turned out to be Cruz. He snapped.
None of her other... Wait, she wanted to give her virginity to Barons? She said that?
I shrugged. She was a teenager.
Barons and Danny would never work,
he said tightly. Nobody said they would. That would be as wrong as me and you. Ew. He bristled.
What the bloody hell is wrong with me?
And there you are, I said. See? You don't want to have sex with me, but it sure burns when I reject you. He shot me an icy look.
You didn't reject me. I wasn't offering. But if I felt like it, I could change your mind.
Oh, God, men. Sometimes there was nothing else you could say. Barons growled low in his throat.
Not that I want to,
Riordan said hastily.
Or would ever want to.
Barons growled again.
Christ, let's just end this conversation,
Riordan said tightly.
It's going nowhere. Let's.
Barons agreed. Let's not, I said. How did it end with you and Danny? I pressed, worried for her.
I left. That's how the fuck it ended. I got out of there as fast as I could.
So you don't know where she went? I needed to find her, talk to her, see if I could help with her bruised pride or feelings or whatever she was going through now. I said to Barons, I'm going to sift to her and see how she is. Riordan stiffened, sucking in a harsh breath.
Oh, fuck. Don't.
He growled, turning his back to me, hands fisting at his sides. Don't tell me what to...
Don't sift to her. Your timing would be terrible.
I stared at him. His back was ramrod straight, and he shuddered. He turned and shot Barons an unreadable look, crammed so full of an unfathomable conversation, and I desperately wanted an interpretation. Barons went still. Closed his eyes and rubbed them. What's going on? I said softly. Without opening his eyes, Barons murmured.
Danny is having sex.
My gaze whipped back to Riordan. You can feel that because of the brand on her neck? Riordan said nothing, just stood there like he'd been turned to stone, nostrils flaring, eyes sparking crimson, his fangs extended, protruding from his mouth. My gaze shot back to Barons, and I was just about to speak when he said to Riordan,
You knew when you tattooed her what it would do to you. You knew the price.
What price? I demanded.
She went straight from me to him,
Riordan said, nearly inaudibly. Him who? I practically shouted.
Her fucking kid genius,
he hissed. I couldn't help but smile. She was with Dancer. That was the epic I'd wanted for the woman she'd started to become. For Danny the Mega O'Malley, epic could only be the one thing she'd never had. Normal. Then my heart sank as I remembered the condition of Dancer's heart. I got lost in my thoughts a moment, hoping she didn't... Well, surely she wouldn't be too... vigorous. Danny was super strong. She vibrated when she got excited. Oh, I really needed to stop thinking about this. I shook my head to scatter images and said to Riordan, You did the right thing. You should never have been her first. He looked at me like I was absolutely insane.
Of course I shouldn't.
Then his face hardened, and something I couldn't define stirred in his ancient eyes.
I'm going to be her last.
Without another word, Raiden shifted into the beast and was gone. Deleted scene from High Voltage. Before I began writing the novel, I needed to see the decision Raiden made to leave, to fully understand the emotion and motives behind it. I wrote this scene between him and Barons to flesh it out in my mind.
What are you waiting for? Raiden demanded. Jericho Barons paced the flagstones with such violence, his boots kicked up stone dust with each step. I don't think this is a good idea. Raiden said coolly, I didn't ask you to think, just do it. And if we need you? Barons whirled on him so sharply that the fabric of his long coat cracked like a whip. It's 5 years. The corner of Riordan's mouth lifted in a mocking smile. Surely you can muddle through without me for so short a time. In Faerie with Mac, it may pass as a mere month or two for you. Time crawled in that liminal space where the ancient Fae held formal court. And if something goes wrong, you haven't thought this through, Baron snarled. Riordan arched a brow. He'd never been accused of that before. He considered every detail, often looking centuries ahead, patiently recalibrating. Linchpin theory was his specialty. He who knew how to destroy a thing, a person, a society, controlled it. Have you forgotten who you're talking to? I'm talking to the bloody idiot who thinks something like this is a viable option. Baron snapped. I've taken precautions. Danny will be safe. She's not our only concern. There's also Dagus. Lore will get word to you if he scents wind of the tribunal. You know where to find me. Time also seemed to move more slowly in that strange, terrible place the tribunal dwelled. A lair they'd never been able to find. It might be decades before retribution came slamming down. He'd sometimes entertained the notion that the tribunal deliberately took their time, allowing the offending member of the Nine to think they'd gotten away with taking a human. So when that person was stolen from him, it cut deeper. Then again, it might be never. There had always been 10 of them. The tribunal had only ever come when that number was exceeded. With Barons's son dead, they might never come. This bloody well isn't the answer, Riordan, Barons said impatiently. I killed for no reason and not to feed. I don't take life without a reason. There may be little to distinguish us from the Fae, but that's one of the defining characteristics. You had reason. I'd have done no less. Riordan smiled mirthlessly. And scatter a trail of bodies behind her? She doesn't look back. There is that. But one day she will, and hate me for it. She protects the innocents. She doesn't kill them because something pisses her off. You don't know he was innocent. He wasn't. But according to her rule book, he didn't deserve to die. You didn't kill Dancer. Riordan's gaze shuddered. That was different. She'd loved Dancer. Tenderness had accompanied the erotic images bombarding him through their bond, soothing his beast just enough that he had been able to get himself locked in a cell beneath Chester's, barricaded in, with Lore, Fade, and Castillo standing guard beyond. Danny hadn't felt emotion for the man he'd ripped to pieces, just a hunger in her bones to not be alone, to have a man's arms around her and pretend, with eyes closed, he was the one who'd died in her bed, to feel what Dancer had made her feel, cherished. It hadn't worked. The man hadn't returned what that woman was capable of giving. Elysian passion had been met by dumb plebeian lust. And then when she'd stopped, the bastard tried to take what he hadn't deserved in the first place. She left emptier and more alone than she'd gone in, and the grief she'd suffered deep in her soul had decimated the chains on his beast. He refused to litter her life with corpses. Barons eyed him stonily across the room. Riordan stared impassively back. He knew how much it cost his older half-brother to be here. He'd sworn to never set foot in this place again. After an interminable length of silence, during which both realized they would sit there for a small eternity before either broke eye contact, Barons spun away and fired over his shoulder. "There's another option. Tell her what—" "No!" Riordan snarled. "It's not her problem. It's mine. She needs to breathe, live on her own terms, define herself. Not in opposition, but from choice. No boundaries, no limits, not one bloody cage." He knew Danny. If he told her, she would either curtail her activities to accommodate it, or cut the tattoo off, again, as she had in the Silvers. Neither was acceptable. Freedom was something she'd never known. He wanted her drunk on it. "But Danny asked you to tattoo her." "She didn't know what she was asking. I offered it as a weapon, a shield. She wanted protection, nothing more." A pause then. Silver eyes icy, Riordan said, "I'll kill again. That's my problem, not hers. Long ago, they'd run as beasts, obeyed no code, known no laws. They'd been a breath away from becoming no better than the immortally bored, monstrous fae. Barons had pulled them back from that edge, shaped them into savages with a code that kept them south of monstrosity. On the rare occasions one of them slipped, Barons and Riordan did whatever was necessary to reclaim him. Divided, they were quick to abandon the canon that functioned as a conscience, protected their secrets, and ensured their prosperity. Barons enforced the law. Riordan kept them together. None of them had violated their code in recent centuries, but Riordan had butchered unprovoked, goaded by primal, uncontrollable rage at a situation, not the man he'd killed. He could carve the tattoo from Danny's skin. He hungered to escape the brutal intimacy of their bond, an intimacy she was unaware of, didn't realize worked the way it did. Yet, if he sliced it from her flesh, he wouldn't be able to find her if she got lost. He'd sworn to her that he'd never let her be lost. He'd sworn it to himself. Their bond was his guarantee that she would never face danger by herself again. Danny O'Malley had been alone in all the wrong ways and none of the right ones. Imprisoned as a child, she'd been unable to choose even the simplest elements of her day-to-day survival. He'd micromanage the hell out of her if he remained in his current imbalanced state. He'd do irreparable harm. She'd done her time in a cage. He'd do his. "If she does get lost," Barons said finally. Riordan said nothing, just leaned back against the bars and folded his arms behind his head. Barons knew if Danny used the spell etched into her phone and flesh, nothing could stop Riordan from being sent to her, not even what his brother was about to do to him. He'd also given him instructions that if she called him at all, which would mean she was ready, Barons was to set him free. "You'll starve down here," Barons goaded. "I'll slaughter up there. The years will bring madness. I'll deal with it. You'll still feel it all." Again, Riordan said nothing. There was nothing to say. It was true. He would. But he wouldn't kill again. "You could get trapped in the beast skin, be unable to change back." Barons pushed, his eyes sparking crimson as he recalled another day, another time. "Unlike you, I prefer my human skin. I'll find my way back. It's dark, underground."
Barons knew his past. That was a very long time ago, Riordan parried with soft menace. It'll be hell. I know what hell is, Barons. It's not this. A small slice of hell, however, was taking a man's life, merely because Danny had taken him to her bed. A larger slice of hell was knowing he'd do it again and again. The fairest portion of hell would be the contempt in her eyes. "Do it," he told Barons. "You owe me." Before he started to lose control again and decided he was fine killing them all, before he convinced himself the active caring and concern for the well-being of another person's body and soul, as she'd once informed him love was, scorn and fire flashing in her eyes, justified eliminating all intimacy but his. After a long silence, Barons murmured, "When we first transcribed that spell, we knew the mere placing of it would call high price. It's not your fault. You gift her with the greatest protection you can give, the willingness to abandon everything, to turn into the killing machine she needs anytime she needs it. You accept sacrificing your sanity and life each time she summons you. You grant her immense control over you and open yourself to a bond that can be pure poison for us. And the mere placement of that mark loosens the restraints on your beast. It's an unavoidable side effect." Again, Riordan said nothing. Civilized for eons, disciplined, iron-willed, he'd believed he could handle it. Nothing rattled him. But that woman. "We suffer incarceration no better than the Fae. It'll hurt." "Worse than being burned alive," Baron snapped. "Pain is relative. What if 5 years isn't long enough?" "It had better be. She's mortal." 5 years wasted. 5 years of her life Riordan would never get to see. And it would be the second 5 years of her life he'd lost. A decade total. He inhaled sharply, going rigid as curved black talons exploded from his fingertips. He slammed his hands into the floor, gouging deep gashes in the stone. His skeleton was suddenly too large for his body, his muscles shifting and elongating. She was on fire inside, angry about something, and he felt it. He felt everything she felt. That was the problem. He wanted her to taste all the world had to offer, gorge on it, then choose him, because he was the best the world had to offer. To the most lawless of men, choice was golden. It didn't matter what you were, it mattered what you did with it. "Do it. Now." Baron sighed, acknowledging this was one of those exceedingly rare arguments he wasn't going to win. "Our cuffs connect us. You have but to demand I release you should you change your mind." And because of their cuffs, Barons would feel his pain, bear it in silence and never speak of it. Riordan dropped back on powerful black-skinned haunches with a low, guttural growl. "Ah, brother," Barons muttered, a string of curses in a language long dead, but inclined his head and closed his eyes. When he opened them again, they were blood-red pools. Intricate tattoos slithered and moved beneath his skin as he chanted the words of an ancient spell. Riordan began to scream. But the day came when the only sound that filled that hellish place was the tortured baying of a half-mad, starved beast in endless pain.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of High Voltage by Karen Marie Manning, performed by Amanda Lee Cobb and Jim Frangione, directed by Lewis Milgram. Performance copyright 2018 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc.
All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.